Welcome. I'm Larry Olson. And what's on your mind? Once set, it delivers your life. To change the outcomes we want, we must change the plays we're running. Join us at Mindset Playbook with real people, real talk, for real insight.
This episode is brought to you by our new NeuroEdge program. Join us for this groundbreaking accelerator where you'll receive on-demand training and live coaching with Larry. Transform your mind, elevate your team, achieve extraordinary results. NeuroEdge.
I want to welcome everyone to Mindset Playbook, where we examine the habits, the attitudes, the beliefs, and the expectations that drive our behavior, as well as the plays or strategies we use that either hold us back or accelerate us forward. And speaking of being held back, let's discuss our reptilian brain or the amygdala. It's the fight-flight-freeze mechanism designed to keep us safe when the thought of or actual danger takes place in our lives. So what? Who cares? What difference does that make, you might be asking yourself? Well, how much cortisol you pump into your system plays a huge role in the quality of your life, and more specifically, how you're feeling right now, as well as how long you live. And with that being said, I want to welcome my guest today, a former, and I just love this, Navy SEAL turned mental health expert, Christopher Lee Maher. And now, just how important is what we're about to learn? You know, as I've mentioned before in other podcasts, research shows that we're genetically programmed to live to 140 and beyond. And yet in our country, men make it to 75 and women about 82. And since stress is known as a silent killer, outside a poor diet, lack of exercise, and not hydrating enough, just what is the cost of a stress-filled life? Well, the foundation of Christopher's work is to help others identify and move through the fight or flight responses that prevent them from reaching their highest potential. He does this by combining a SEAL, this is quote, a SEAL mindset, end quote, modern day stress management strategies, and traditional Chinese medical practices in service of helping his clients break free from a lifetime of unresolved stress. Christopher, first off, I want to welcome you to Mindset Playbook.
Thank you. Dude, you have the best intro. I've done a lot of these. Yours is awesome.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, that's because of the guest, of course. Hey, Christopher, in the time that we have, please take us on your journey from Navy SEAL to the man you are today, and share with us what the SEAL mindset is and a tip or two on how we can break free from a lifetime of unresolved stress.
You know, it's interesting. When people think of Navy SEALs and the way we're portrayed in the public, I think people walk away with guys that are big and strong and rough and tough. And when you show up to SEAL training, there's a lot of guys in your class. So I grouped up with 149 guys. Of those original 149 guys, only 13 of us graduated.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
So that shows you, you know, the attrition rate is about 92%.
Okay.
That's average for a class. And I'm investigative. So I'm always talking to guys. Where are you from? What sports did you play? Did you go to college? And I'm getting some background on guys. And most guys were athletes at some level, and they did well. A lot of guys were state champions and whatever sport they were in. The funny thing is, most of the guys in my platoons that made it through SEAL training were wrestlers.
Ah.
They were either wrestlers, swimmers, or cross-country runners. The guys that played team sports, basketball, football, they dropped out pretty quickly.
They just had short bursts of energy, didn't they?
Yeah. They had short bursts of energy. But they also emotionally had to rely on other people.
Oh, right? Gotcha.
When you're a wrestler and you're in the middle of the mat, there's only you and the other guy. When you're a swimmer, there's only you in your lane. There's no one else in your lane that's going to drag you along when you're having a bad day. And when you run cross country, yeah, you're part of a team, but no one else is running beside you to pick you up, right?
Gotcha.
The gun goes off and you've got to figure out how much energy, how much confidence, how much will you're going to summon in order to get across the line in an efficient amount of time, right?
And your background, what was your experience? Was it athletics or what?
So
created your will to draw from?
Yeah, I think I got my will to draw from childhood abuse.
Right? Childhood view?
No, childhood abuse.
Abuse. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So when I was 3 and a half, a woman who was a babysitter of mine, Miss Baskerfield, Phil Duffy, decided that the best way to teach me to not play with matches was to put my hands on the gas stove.
Oh, stop.
Yeah. No, dead serious, right?
Oh, so, my golly.
So, and on my second day of birth, I was born bow-legged. They broke my legs mid-thigh and casted me, right?
Oh, stop.
Like, you start looking at these events, right?
What a start.
Yeah, quite a start, right? Besides the circumcision on day one, right? Yeah. So circumcised day one, break my legs on day two, burn my hands at 3 and a half years old. And, you know.
Probably the only one you really have any conscious memory of is that 3 and a half year old experience, huh?
The 3 and a half year old experience I have a conscious memory of.
Yeah.
Like the entire event. From her picking me up to me biting her in the face to running away. And then she decided, I think she was having a break from reality.
Okay.
And she then decided to put Vicks Vapor Rub on my burns. And then I passed out and ejected out of my body and I was depersonalized. And what that means is I was floating above my body till I was about 4 and a half years old. And I felt safe.
You when I did that for a year, huh?
Yeah. And then I entered back into my body. But I
So would you call that astral projection?
Yeah, astral projection, if it was conscious.
Okay.
The chosen. This wasn't consciously chosen. This was chosen by my superconscious.
Gotcha.
And children
to protect you.
Yeah. Children have a closer relationship with their superconscious because they're closer to birth than adults do, right?
Yeah.
Adults have a deep level relationship with their conscious mind.
Yeah.
And so I was still in that precognitive state of function and development because that happens between womb and seven. And so it was, I think the intensity of my first 3 and a half years, plus my mother was Irish. Her parents were Irish, and then her grandparents were from Ireland. So I think having a mixed child in the late 60s.
Oh boy, yeah.
You know, she hid me in Philadelphia. Her family didn't even know I was born. Do you know what I mean? So I had dealt with childhood abandonment, all this kind of stuff. By the time I was 3 and a half, I think because I survived those circumstances, I'm not going to say it made SEAL training easy, but there was never a moment where I thought, oh God, this is so tough, I have to quit.
Yeah, yeah. Or you're talking to a peer and he goes, God, I got to tell you, the worst thing that ever happened to me was at 3 and a half, a buddy of mine stole my favorite toy.
Yeah. Okay, Ralph.
What?
It's okay, buddy. How about I give you a hug?
What a frame of reference. I mean, I am proud of you that you.
Oh, thank you.
That we're having this conversation, for crying out loud.
Yeah, because you know that could have ended up me being a very abusive person, being extremely passive aggressive.
Yeah,
you know, developing could be in prison, all kinds of social disorders, and none of that actually happened.
Do you think that was in kind of internal within you, or was there an involvement that occurred where you were able to create this concept called trust?
I think it was purposeful. I know for sure I never ever lost my trust in God.
Okay.
And
So it was a being greater than self was.
Yeah.
You were in connection with.
Yeah, and I think being out of my body for a year right, allowed me to have a deep understanding that this is all part of my process.
Wow.
And so I never once
doubted. What a gift.
And I never once blamed.
Okay.
Huh. And then my mother, she committed suicide when I was 7 years old. And then I bounced around.
But it wasn't your mother that burned you, was it?
No.
It was a caretaker.
Feel my babysitter.
Your babysitter.
Yeah. In a way, my mother was indirectly responsible because she left me with this woman's family.
Yeah, gave up accountability.
If she had been there. So I know she suffered from the guilt and shame of that.
Yeah.
And so I think when you have a tough childhood, and then I got a break and I was invited to come up and test and see if I could go to Milton Hershey School. Milton Hershey School is the world's most privately well-endowed boarding school, right? The school's worth $18 billion.
For heaven's
sake.
And
so I went to boarding school there.
Was that in New Jersey or Philadelphia?
That is in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
And Hershey, Pennsylvania.
School owns Hershey Foods Incorporated. Right. So imagine that. They're like the world's third largest conglomerate. They own, like, I don't know, at the time, I think it was like 16 different companies.
Right? Okay.
PP&L and electric companies. They own San Giorgio Spaghetti and all. Yeah. So they were well endowed, and they have offered me an opportunity away from those experiences.
And how old were you then?
I was 7 and a half when I entered into Milton Hershey School.
And how did that even come about?
That came about because my grandmother eventually got custody of me.
Oh, okay.
And she decided, hey, let me back up. My mother, before she committed suicide, had already filled out the paperwork and found Milton Hershey School.
Okay.
And I think part of my mom's motivation was that she knew that if both parents were missing in a child's life, they were going to be admitted to the school much more quickly than someone who had parents that were alive.
Gotcha.
I think part of her motivation was to make sure my brother and I moved to the top of the list. And I think what she missed out on is that I could care less about the education. What I wanted was nurturing, care, and affection and connection. Yep.
How old was your mom when she committed suicide?
She was 29.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So imagine my mom dies, to show you about stress. Her father died of cirrhosis of the liver, okay, at 43, mm-hmm. Spigots. She committed suicide by 29. And my grandmother died of cancer at 68.
Hmm.
Okay, but the kind of cancer she had was lung and colon cancer from all of the smoking that she was doing.
I got you.
So yeah. If you look at that and you go, oh, wow, there's this mental illness for three generations. And so I was handed, if you've done any study in epigenetics, you know, you're well aware that you're going to receive at least 4 to 7 generations of stress from the generations before you. And my mom's side of the family, they were peasants in Ireland, right? They were poor. Extremely poor. And so getting to America was kind of a big deal. And she came from a family of coal miners.
Oh, boy. Right? Yeah.
So a lot of, you know, black lung in my family. And you just look back and you go, wow, these people were highly stressed. They were chemically stressed. They were emotionally stressed. My mother was raised
economically stressed.
Yeah, they were economically stressed. And so I was born into a family of every form of stress that you could imagine. And it was a Catholic family, and there's Catholic stress, right? That's religious stress.
Yeah.
And, you know, Irish communities are very tight, right? And so she dealt with a lot, and then she passed all of that off to me. And I somehow, through the grace of God, figured out how to unravel and unwind myself out of this, and then devoted my life to putting other people back together. Because what most people don't know is, yeah, sure, I'm a Navy SEAL. I have a really strong will. But after I got out of the SEAL teams and I entered back into society, I started losing my vision. Okay. I started losing my hearing, and I had pain at every single joint. By the time I was 33, I needed a full-blown hip replacement. I was an insomniac. Okay. And emotionally, I was socialized really well because of boarding school, because of fraternities in college, and because of the SEAL team, so and the military. So I'd been in social environments, but the thing that people didn't understand is I had what I would call trauma-induced spectrum disorder. Okay.
And explain that.
So what happens is when most people think of someone that's on the spectrum, right, they think, oh, well, your father had Asperger's, so you were born that way. And gotcha. With trauma-induced spectrum disorder, it puts a person's nervous system in a state of hypervigilance. And so then what happens is they have to take on the identity of what's going to allow them to survive the most. And so in that hypervigilant state and with this very, let's say, curated identity, they're able to move through the world and get recognition and be valued and all those kinds of things that humans crave at a social emotional level. But then they still have, they're still having difficulty reading social emotional cues because their nervous system is such a high state of hypervigilance that they're not picking up on the subtle details.
How would you like to wake up from the drudgeries and stresses of day-to-day life? If yes, Larry's ready to coach you, as he has thousands on the proven step-by-step strategies where you'll break through limiting beliefs, elevate your confidence, and inspire others. To find out how, go to LarryOlson.com. And now back to Larry and his guest.
You know, most people are aware, you know, when you're angry, count to 10, all those elements, because your amygdala has taken over.
Yeah.
You're in the fight, flight, freeze, and it impedes the frontal lobes. In fact, and as you know, in serious situations, the frontal lobes are gone, and now you're all on. You're just innate, and hopefully your program isn't correct enough to get you out of the situation. But what you're saying, and I want our audience to pick up on this, they have a constant cortisol drip.
Yeah.
They're in a constant state of stress, and it's not just psychological, it's also physiological.
For sure.
And what have you seen as, you know, with you, do you think that had to do with the hearing and the visuals that were beginning to dissipate? I would think the poundings and all of that might have had to do with the hips, but
yeah,
straighten me out.
Yeah, so if we could just track the first symptom that showed up was stammering, was stuttering. The second symptom that showed up was bedwetting. The third symptom that showed up was nail biting.
Okay.
Right? So I was constantly biting my nails. I was wetting my bed. And this wasn't like I was wetting the bed like every Saturday or every Sunday night. I was wetting the bed every single night.
Okay.
Right. So when I was going to sleep, I was going into such a deep state of sleep that I couldn't even recognize regular physiological function.
Wow. Wow. Right?
And that occurred.
And generally, that is so innate.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, it just it shuts off your ability to urinate.
Right. Wow. And, you know, I was very young. So I should have had kidneys strong enough and a bladder large enough to hold me through the night, and that wasn't happening. So there was something going
on.
Was
there shame attached with that at all?
Well, remember, I went to a boarding school, and fortunate for me, I had a house mother.
Oh, okay.
Named Mrs. Akins, Cleta. And when she saw that I wet the bed the first night, she brought me down to the kitchen at breakfast with everybody, and she goes, if any one of you boys ever makes fun of this child for wetting the bed, you are going to have more chores than you could ever imagine. So no one ever made fun of me for stuttering.
She was your angel.
She was my angel. And no one ever made fun of me for wetting the bed. Right. So I didn't have to deal. The shame that I had to deal with was.
It tears me up, man.
Thank you. The shame I had to deal with was hanging my sheets up in the morning where the other student homes could look across and see me hanging my sheets. And so there was a little bit of shame there.
Yeah. But
mostly that occurred from what, 7 and a half basically, until I'd say probably about eight until I was 13.
5 years.
Yeah, for 5 years. Yep.
Wow.
And then, yeah.
Wow.
And then that stopped. So okay. If you look at the nail biting, the bedwetting, and the stammering, it took me 5 years to get through that. And so we know that there was something going on with the circuits between the brain and the mouth, between the brain and the kidneys, between the brain and the bladder, and the amount of nervousness that was going on. Well, it's very interesting in traditional Chinese medicine. What they say is that all of your pre-heaven qi, meaning all the energy that God gave you before he sent you to earth, is stored in the kidneys. Well, bedwetting is associated with kidney dysfunction. Okay. Nail biting nervousness is associated with kidney dysfunction. All right.
It is.
Huh. And then hearing loss is associated with kidney dysfunction. Insomnia is associated with kidney dysfunction. So joint pain, the joints are controlled by the kidneys, all kidney dysfunction. Well, the interesting thing is when you look at that fear.
Does kidney have a role in inflammation?
It definitely has a role in inflammation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so when you look at this, you go, wow, kidney.
Yeah.
Kidney.
Yeah.
Wow, the kidneys were severe.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yes.
Sorry.
What's funny is that the kidneys are associated with humor.
Oh.
Yeah. So are you kidding me? Right.
There was a pun intended.
Yeah. It was a pun intended.
So, all right.
So wow. I had insufficient kidney energy because I was locked into a perpetual state of fight or flight.
Yeah.
And so the fight or flight response.
And not aware of any of this during this period of time, right? There's got to be a part of you that's what's wrong with me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this doesn't make any sense is the way my mind is working. Like, hold on.
Not a lot of peers to relate to who are going through the same thing. Yeah.
And then when you look at the process of SEAL training. So if you look at my training as a youth, and then you look at SEAL training spent a lot of time in cold water.
Okay.
And in traditional Chinese medicine, what they teach you is that there's two organs that abhor the cold, and it's the kidneys and the spleen and pancreas.
That hate cold.
Hate cold water.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's almost an oxymoron, right?
Right. So I go through all the fire as a child.
Yeah.
And then I go through all the freezing as a young adult. And these are the two, you know, these are the two main energies. You look at the sun and you look at the ocean, fire and water. So those were the things that prepared me to go into heel training.
Holy cow. Yeah. And you said heel training.
Yeah heel
not
training.
Not to be confused with SEAL training.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody to miss that.
Yeah. So I worked on myself 5 to 6 hours a day, every day. I read every book that I could about detoxification, about stretching, about body work, about energy work. I went to every yoga class you could go to in San Diego, hot yoga, regular yoga, meditation, breath work, acupuncture, acupressure, Feldenkrais, the Igasuku method. Like, I looked under every stone and every fallen branch in the woods to find anyone that had developed anything that I thought could possibly help me. And I put every one of those systems to the test to see, like, could they really resolve what was going on here? And I always went in with a good attitude.
Okay.
The challenge is none of them were strong enough or complex enough to pull me out of or create a pattern interrupt strong enough to pull me out of the fight or flight response.
Okay.
And so they were kind of
circled it a little bit.
Yeah, they circled it a little bit. And look, to be honest with you, at the time, I was very happy for the relief that I was getting, even though it was minor. It still gave me hope.
Wow.
It still gave me hope. And I think that's the thing that I needed the most. And so I just kept pressing on. And then finally, one of the guys that I went to Milton Hershey School at boarding school, a guy named Mark Pershpalaja, sends me this email. Says, look, I've got this guy that I found. He's got 5 stretches that'll change your life. And I'm like, at the time, I'm still in that SEAL team mindset. And I'm like, F you. Why don't you go use these 5 stretches to change your life? Who the hell are you to tell me what I need to do? I'm doing the Igasuku method, Rolfing, Feldenkrais, hot yoga, acupuncture. I got it together, buddy.
Been there, done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks
what
do
they,
later,
you know what they say? That's why that great statement, it's not what you know that holds you back, but thinking you do that does.
Yeah. And that was, well, that held me back for 2 weeks. And
okay,
then
two weeks okay.
later, I got a call from one of my clients, this very, very gentle woman, like half Japanese, half Irish, very still in her being, always quiet, always, how do we say it, always centered and balanced. And she said, I just saw this guy on Good Morning America. And I said, let me guess, he's got 5 stretches that'll change my life. And she goes, did you watch it? This is unbelievable. And I go, no, but I'm starting to get the message.
Okay, right.
Right. And at the time, I always waited for things to happen in threes. And this time, something told me, Christopher, abandon your strategy and go find this guy.
Okay.
And so it took me about 6 months to track him down. I went up to see him in San Jose, California, and he worked on me the 6 to 8 hours a day. And after that, I had no pain in my body. My sleep returned to normal, and all the symptoms that I had were all gone.
For heaven's
and
sake.
I was so angry because I had spent, 4 years of time invested, all my money, all my effort, and all my energy, and I was getting nowhere fast.
No, you got to him. You got to him.
Yeah. So eventually it was going to happen. But it's interesting the way that I got to him, which is, okay. I think is relevant for the story.
Okay.
That I remember waking up one day going, who's the crazy person who decided we need to work 5 days a week? This doesn't make any sense to me. We should work Monday through Thursday and have a 3-day weekend every week. I think people would have much better lives if that happened. And so I said, well, if I'm going to have that thought, I should probably do it myself. So I called up all my clients on Fridays. I said, I don't work on Fridays anymore. You're going to have to move into Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. So I woke up on that first Friday. I looked up to heaven in the morning when I woke up. I think it was like 10 o'clock in the morning. And I said, please help me get to this guy. Like, what more can I do? Like, I'm doing everything I can. Can you give me more help? And sure enough, when I called him, he picked up his phone. And that's how I got to San Jose. But I don't think it would have ever happened if I had decided to stay in my 5-day work week.
Okay.
Wasn't already using my mind to make conscious choices to create a better opportunity for me. And I think at that point, spirit, the universe, source, God, whatever you want to call it, said, okay, he is putting in the time. He is putting in the effort. I think I'm going to give him a leg up.
Yeah.
And I got a real leg up. And this guy showed me how to remove tension and stress and create instantaneous permanent change.
Whoa.
Yeah.
and that's your field now. That's your profession.
Yeah, that's my field. So what I did with him is I worked with him for about 2.5 years, and he taught me reluctantly everything that he knew because he was on the spectrum, and so he was very guarded with information because his whole identity was developed around what he had discovered. And so if you were to take that away from him, he would have no sense of self.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
And so at some point I got really frustrated and I was like, look, I there's no way I can kiss this guy's butt any longer. Like, there's got to be a better way. So I said, at the time he had what he called the meridian stretching method. And so I said, okay, I'm going to go to school and study traditional Chinese medicine. And then I moved back to San Diego. I enrolled 4 of my friends and we worked on ourselves 3 to 4 hours a day. 2 to 3, sometimes 4 days a week to remove these intense levels of stress and tension and distortion out of the physiological, but also out of the structural system. And we built an entire body of work out of that need for each of us. And what I call today true body intelligence. And then I went to school, studied traditional Chinese medicine. Then I started flying all over the planet to learn all these other practices that I thought would be highly beneficial, but I'm the type of person I have to put myself through these things to see what real value there is. So I basically use myself as a guinea pig for 7 years straight, 5 to 6 hours a day.
Well, you can't get any more authentic than that.
Yeah. Restored my hearing, restored my vision, got rid of all the pain in my hip, got rid of all the pain in my body. I sleep like a bear, never wake up in the middle of the night to urinate. And this is 23 years later, right? Wow. I still don't have a speck of discomfort in my body. And the key is what you started out with at the beginning of the call with. You have to figure out how to create a successful pattern interrupt in order to break the fight or flight response. And when you do that, what's going to happen is your brain's going to move out of a lateralized state of function. And what I mean by lateralized is you're going to have more electrical input in both hemispheres. And when that happens, you have a body structurally that's balanced. But when you're in a lateralized state of function, one side of your body's stronger, tighter, and shorter. The other one's longer, weaker, and more flaccid. And so the key to building a sound structural balanced body is to simply get your brain back into a whole brain thinking state.
Gotcha. Yeah. It seems like most of us have been brought up, at least in the West, left brain only.
Yes.
And playtime becomes right brain, but they don't incorporate it.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about is the manifestation of, are truly where manifestation comes from.
Yes.
Is utilizing all of us, all of everything that's available inside and outside.
Yeah.
And that connection at 3.5, that just staggers my mind. There's one side of me that, what if, but I don't know if I'd want to do the hand thing on the fire in order to be ordained into being able to escape for a year.
Yeah. Trial by fire.
But the learnings that life has provided you. And I think what's really powerful, Christopher, is you sought it out.
Yeah.
And then instead of intellectualizing it, like a lot of us do, oh, I could see where that would work, you actually implemented it. So you could find out for yourself what you could profess and what was still a educational process and no learning had happened yet. And the brilliance in what you're sharing with us, the brilliance within everyone, but how it gets contaminated and how it gets flawed and covered up with all of these labels and all of the experiences that we have that we misinterpret. And, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of theories out there that if there's any voice you want to stop paying attention to, it's the one in your own mind. And unfortunately, that's because of the conditioning. You know, it's not because it can't be a wonderful voice.
Sure.
But for heaven's sakes, would you be up for doing another interview?
Oh, 1,000%.
Would you?
Yeah, it'd be great. Would love to.
Because as far as I'm concerned, we've just created some arenas now to really dig in deep about.
Yeah, we and I can go deep, which is really fun.
I'm sure you can. And that's where I like to go because I think that's where the ahas come from. And without awareness, you know, as people are listening to us, if they don't get, oh my golly, I've been doing that. Oh, would that be possible? If they don't get that, and then, you know, there's no 800 operator standing by that, you know, which always nauseates me. I mean, I get so disappointed on that, but I understand it. But I would really like to be able to peel this down and I'd continue now, but I've got that other gig.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Needs to happen.
And
okay.
All you have to do is, it's very simple. You just email Christina and she'll put us in the book and I will be ready to go and I will be on time this time.
That's all right. But what I'd like to do, though, for those that don't get a chance to pick up the next one, is as we're signing off, those are out there right now that are in a little pain, little discomfort, and really not being able to live the life that was designed for us to live, if you will.
Sure.
What would you have them think about?
I think that's
and then easy. And then how do they get a hold of you? Those two things.
I think the easiest thing to look at is since we already went over the lateralized state of function in the brain, you have to ask yourself, what are the daily acceptable drugs that you're using that are continuing to stress out your brain, right? Mm. And so is it nicotine? Is it alcohol? Is it a pharmaceutical? Is it a recreational drug? Is it sugar? Like which?
Processed foods.
So is it food colorings, preservatives? Like which of the daily acceptable drugs is the one you're most addicted to? And the best thing you could possibly do for yourself is to cut your relationship with that in half this week. The next week, cut it in half again. And do that until you're no longer addicted to that. And gotcha. By doing so, you're going to give your brain more energy, more electricity. It's going to be more aware, more present, and you're going to make better decisions. And I think that's probably the best thing that they could do.
Beautiful, beautiful.
If you wanted to find me, you go to truebodyintelligence.com. I wrote a book called Free for Life, A U.S. Navy SEAL's Path to Inner Freedom and Outer Peace. Beautiful. And if you like Instagram, I always give a 60-second to 90-second download every other day. You go to Christopher Lee Maher, M-A-H-E-R. And if you're looking for inspiration and education on, you know, at least 3 or 4 days a week, you can get that for free. I like to give people things for free. You could also go to True Body Intelligence for YouTube or Facebook or those things. But I'm out there. I'm always giving away free information. And there's no cost. Well, actually, there's a cost. The cost is your time.
Okay. All right. And the one thing we can't get back, so we better invest it wisely.
No, the one thing you can't get back is time. Remember, people will tell you this, and this is good for all the listeners. People will tell you that your most valuable commodity is time. And I remember sitting down, I was in prayer meditation. I said, is this true? And then God laughed and said, of course that's not true. Your most valuable commodity is love.
Oh, okay. All right. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, speaking of time.
Yeah, speaking of time.
we're gonna get together. We're going to do this again. And I want to thank all of you. You had a lot of choices. I want to thank you for picking probably one today that will absolutely change your life. And start by asking yourself, you know, what can I just do half of this month, week?
Yeah.
And do the half-life philosophy. Yeah. I like that. And it's been a joy. Christopher, I'm glad we had this opportunity, and we will definitely talk again.
Okay, great. Well, I'm excited about that.
All right. All the best to all of you. Take care. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, we ask that you please subscribe and share with your friends and associates. Are you ready to challenge your current thinking? Welcome to our next podcast, where we're excited to introduce our upcoming guest, the visionary Anders Inset. A Norwegian-born writer, deep tech investor, and former elite athlete, Anders has made a name for himself as a fifth-time Spiegel best-selling author and one of the most influential thinkers in the fields of technology and leadership, as recognized by Thinkers 50. What sets Anders apart is his ability to shatter conventional wisdom, pushing boundaries and redefining the way we think about achievement. Get ready for a paradigm-shifting conversation that will challenge your perspectives and propel you from the finite to the infinite. Trust us, you won't want to miss this.